What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Going the Distance podcast presented by ImmaculateSports.com. Twitter's at ImmacSports.
Instagram is also at ImmacSports.
TikTok, YouTube, Immaculate Sports. And it is episode 205 today. Of course, we're going to start it off with the usual baseball weekly awards. Also going to talk about some contenders. But really, what I'm excited to do is finally get into some fantasy football talk. We're going to have our version of that, Kyle, in the second half of this episode.
Yeah, we're going to get the ball rolling on the NFL season. Obviously, we're still just over 3 to 4 weeks away of the first game on September 5th, but we are going to kind of progress nicely into that, full in-season in-depth preview that we always do for whenever there's a big league starting, like the NBA, NFL, or the MLB. But we got to go position by position to help out the fantasy teams and kind of take our picks on who we think are going to have a good season. So we'll get more into that in a little bit, but we're going to be talking about wide receivers and tight ends and perhaps some really good seasons there. So we'll get back to that in a little bit. But I'll let you go ahead and get it started with the opener. And one of the craziest things that we've seen basketball-wise in our lifetime.
Yeah, I figured this would be the best thing most of us saw this weekend. So we'll just dive right into it. Team USA, they win the gold medal game against France, 98-87. The MVP of the tournament, LeBron James, an amazing job as the point guard. But really the guy who stole the show, per usual, was Stephen Curry. He was really the closer in these big last two games, specifically the final. He had 24 points, all on threes, 8 of 13. Just magnificent, even at the end of the game. When you see Steph Curry looking off a wide-open LeBron James, you know he's about to pull something. And those shots happen to go in, and it was awesome to see. I'm sure there'll be some controversy when we get closer to the season with guys like Joel Embiid and Jason Tatum not playing as many minutes, but I just want to focus on the positives. The three old guys, Steph, LeBron, KD, just what a fantastic way to go out, because I'm sure they won't be coming back for 2028.
Yeah, it was usually baseball has romance in it, but in this Olympics, we got to see that on the basketball side as well too. And I think something I've seen a ton with LeBron and Steph was born to be teammates, forced to be rivals. Mm-hmm. And that's 100% true. Like, we saw, in the span with the Warriors or even the Olympics, just the cohesion that Steph and Kevin Durant have, or, Steph or Draymond Green, Steph and Klay Thompson. But it's a different level when it's a guy like LeBron, and to have his ability coincide with Steph's ability and kind of how they just fed off of each other in the way that they knew how, because they've been on big teams and are okay with not 100% taking the best, or not the best shot, but the final shot every single time. Obviously, ended up with Steph taking the final shot. But regardless, egos aside, they played so well together. It was really cool to see the aspect of, oh, we finally get to root for LeBron now. Oh, or the non-Warrior fans, that we finally get to root for Steph. And there's so many comments on Twitter, TikTok, whatever it is, like, oh, this is how Warrior fans felt for 13 years. Like, I Absolutely. Can understand why they were so crazy online and stuff like that, because this guy's unreal to watch. Like, Stephen Curry's one of a kind. There's never going to be anybody like him. There never has been anybody like him. And to say that we, are able to relish the stuff that he's doing in live time, it's pretty damn cool to see, because this guy, he's not going to be considered MJ or the GOAT or whatever, but he's our GOAT. Growing up in the Bay Area, he's got to be considered that GOAT for us. But to see that come full effect on a global scale, not just, in the NBA, well, it was really damn cool to see.
Yeah, also a quick shout-out to the French team. Those guys are going to be coming back with a vengeance in 4 years. Wembanyama, I can't even imagine what the first week of the NBA season is going to be like. It probably won't be looking like Giannis when he comes back. That's probably in a couple years from now. You can't put on 100 pounds in a year. That's crazy. But shout-out him. Yabusele, a guy who's going to get another shot in the NBA. Just a great matchup. Better than the past couple blowouts we've seen in these games.
Yeah, Wemby's definitely a good point to hit on there as well, too, is I think about the next Olympics, 2028, how good he's going to be. But then I also think about the Olympics after that in 2032, mm-hmm. when he's 28 years old, full on in his prime, what does that Wemby look like, and how does he, you know, play on the global scale? He's going to be the best player in the world. Like, it's that simple. There's not going to be a better player than him. So we'll see how that goes. But we still got a little bit of ways for that to go. Yes. So we'll enjoy our reign at the top of USA basketball for now. Something else we got to get into as we get into Where's Your Head At Now, our normal player pitcher rookie of the week. We didn't have a no hitter this week, Skyler, so we didn't get to choose or take the easy way out in those picks. But who was your player of the week for the second week of August?
A lot of great options, but I got to go with Yordan Alvarez. He's back at the top because he crushed everything he saw this week. He hit for the cycle, 4 homers, 7 ribbies, 5 walks, including that 1.9 OPS, which is Judge Ohtani territory. So Yordan is back in the news. Not like he ever left, but him and the Astros finally making some noise.
Yeah, I decided to go away from Yordan, even though he did have a great week. And I went with Jake Berger for his 10 for 20 week with a double and 5 home runs. OPS of 1.8. He was ridiculous. Slow start for him this season, but it's obviously, you know, started off good in the second half here. So Jake Berger, my player of the week. On to pitcher of the week.
I'm going to go with co-winners again. I couldn't decide after last night because they were matched up against each other. Chris Sale, Blake Snell, neither got the dub in that epic matchup. They both get the spot. It was 7-inning shutout, 12 Ks, no walks for the old man Chris Sale, and 6 1/3, 11 Ks, 3 walks for Snell coming off of his no-hitter. He almost did it again. An epic week for those two guys once again.
Yeah, we got treated to a legendary pitcher's duel last night between Chris Sale and Blake Snell. I did go with Sale as my pitcher of the week solely for his 2 starts over the past 2 weeks. He had 11.2 innings pitched and 22 strikeouts, if only allowing 2 earned runs. Started against Milwaukee was okay. Gave up his 2 earned runs there, didn't get through 5, and I believe he had 9 or 10 Ks, whatever it was. But versus San Francisco last night, he was dominant. And he's on pace to be, you know, top 3 name in the NL Cy Young, something that we've talked about in the past. And for his story and how he's been the last few years of dodging injuries, and not just, you know, arm injuries, but freak, you know, ricochet ball off your pinky, broken pinky injuries, stuff like that. And to see him dominating right now is cool to see from a baseball fan perspective. So Chris Sale gets my pitcher of the week. On to rookie of the week.
Yeah, my honorable mention is going to be Tobias Myers, the Milwaukee starter, finally taking that next step. But this one's going to go to Jackson Merrill again. It was 4 homers, 8 ribbies, and just 6 games for one of the hottest teams in baseball.
Yeah, Jackson Merrill is also my rookie of the week. Who would have pictured going into the season that he would be the best Jackson rookie of the Big Jackson 3 this year with him, Cheerio, and Holiday? But the 21-year-old rookie for the Padres went 9 for 23 this past week with a triple, 4 home runs, 8 RBIs, and 2 stolen bases. Beyond the stats, though, those homers came at big moments. In the series against Pittsburgh, he had a couple big homers late in games. And then in the series against Miami over the weekend, a couple big homers late in games as well, 2 to tie or go ahead late in extras. And then he also had a catch to end yesterday's game at home. Against also the Pirates, actually, too. Diving catch would have brought in the tying run if he didn't make the grab. So he's winning, or, you know, making impact on both sides of the ball. And say that this is his first year playing center field for, you know, 21-year-old rookie to be that good in center field, he's going to be a superstar. And it's good to see that he's becoming more of a, you know, household name in his first season, because he is a stud. Mm-hmm. Moving on, though, from our player pitcher rookie of the week, we're going to our contender tier list, kind of like an off-brand power rankings, I guess you consider, but we're just going tiers. There's not like a, you know, tier within the tier or whatever, or maybe there is, who knows. But I just had us originally just go through the teams that are somewhat in contention to start. So no Miami, no Colorado, no Angels, no Oakland, no White Sox, of course, and no Washington Nationals. The other 24 teams within the MLB are in play, and I have 5 different tiers that I put them in. I'll go by the name of them once we get to that. But I guess we could start off on the bottom spot. Who do you have in your D or F tier, your bottom tier list?
Yeah, so my bottom tier is going to be pretty self-explanatory. It is not your year. is what it's called. We got the Texas Rangers dealing with so many injuries. Detroit Tigers, a lot of rental deals ended up selling some guys, specifically Jack Flaherty. And Toronto Blue Jays, they didn't end up trading everybody, but it's just not going to happen this year.
Yeah, I also have three teams in my D tier, and I titled this tier the Bet My Life Against It is in for them to win the World Series. Started off with the Blue Jays, like we saw, like you talked about, kind of had a deadline where they gave away a ton of different guys, and so they are on that list. The Detroit Tigers, just not their year. They gave away Flaherty. Some things didn't work out offensively until maybe the second half, and especially today they have 11 runs off of George Kirby. But besides the point, last team, Texas Rangers. I didn't want to put them in this, but they're 10 games back. We're not going to see a drastic choke from the Yankees, Twins, or Royals, Red Sox, whoever's up at the top in the wild card right now. And so therefore, I'd say it's impossible for Texas to win the World Series. Yeah. Next up, what's your tier name and who do you have in it?
Yeah, the next tier is going to be the outside shot at the playoffs. I have six teams in these next couple of tiers. So we'll start off with the San Francisco Giants, potentially the best rotation in baseball. So I'm not going to kill them off yet. Then we got the Tampa Bay Rays, a little bit of an uphill battle here compared to the National League teams. But Caminero is up now again. We know that Tampa Bay has a lot of dark magic they like to pull off at the end of the season. Similar to the St. Louis Cardinals, my next team, they've fallen down a bit far out of the wild card race, but there's always a shot. The veterans could turn it up a notch. Chicago Cubs, very confusing roster construction, but they didn't sell other than the Morel for Paredes trade, I guess. So they're always in it. Cincinnati Reds, they're still really young and inexperienced. I'm not sure what they need to do to get over the hump. And that's very similar with the last team, Pittsburgh Pirates. It's a great rotation, but they're really young.
Yeah, I got them all. So my C tier is titled Would Completely Shock Me. So, you know, I'd be an utter shock if they were to win the World Series. I have six teams in this list. I'll start off with Tampa Bay, who's in this part for me as well, too. It's just, you know, a retooling year for them. They're not, I don't think, actively, crazily gearing for that last playoff spot. Obviously, it's something that they would, you know, be cool ghoul. But they're not going to be super bummed out if they don't make it. And I think the front office understands that. Next team is St. Louis. I just have no faith in this team. I have no faith in the veterans becoming, you know, Paul Goldschmidt of 2015 and Nolan Arenado of 2015 again. I don't believe the rookies are quite yet there yet to really take over the ropes of this team. And the pitching staff is just not. Some reason when guys go to St. Louis, they just don't become as dominant as they were before. We've already seen it with Eric Betty. Sonny Gray's had some weird moments this season, especially last night. And I just don't trust enough guys in that starting rotation to be good enough in a, you know, playoff series if they were to get there. Next team is the Pittsburgh Pirates. I love this team. I talked about them maybe getting into a wild card spot earlier this year. But as we go later into the season, their offense is just not there. They've lost eight games in a row. They've scored under 500 runs this year. The pitching staff, you know, when healthy, when they have a Jared Jones, is going to be really, really good, especially, you know, year or two down the road when we're looking at year three Paul Skeens, year three Jared Jones, and, you know, year six or whatever, Mitch Keller, that's going to be a good starting three. But they need some offense, and that's going to be the biggest, you know, what if for them until they get to that spot on what this team's potential is. Then I have the Cubs. This doesn't, you know, look like a playoff team right now. I know they've been good as of late, seven out of their last 10 and only two games under 500, four games out of the wild card spot right now. But this team also just isn't built for it in the playoffs. And so I'm going to take them out of the equation. The Cincinnati Reds, starting pitching is not there. The mojo isn't there as well, too. I know, you know, missing Matt McClain is definitely a big thing. And I think that's, you know, the main reason why I chalk it up to them not being in the contention, or not contention, they're close, but not in the, you know, a spot this year. And the last team, kind of shocking, I do have the Milwaukee Brewers here, despite being a division leader, because I have no trust in that starting rotation. And I know they have arms up the wazoo that they can throw in the seventh, eighth, ninth inning. But to get a solid five or six innings from, you know, anyone outside of Freddie Peralta, I don't trust Tobias Myers a ton. I don't trust Colin Ray enough. So I'm going to take the Milwaukee Brewers as a complete shock to me if they were to win a World Series. And that completes my C tier. On the next one.
All right, my next tier, I do have Milwaukee kicking things off in the tier above you, but there's a reason for that. This tier is called, I'd be shocked if they won a playoff series. So that makes sense for Milwaukee. Obviously, they played much better since we bashed them a little bit last power rankings, but they need a lot of help. That goes the same here with the AL West team. Seattle and Houston, they're kind of polar opposites right now, but both lineups are much better. And when that's happening, I'm going to take Houston. Kansas City, it's a great rotation, but again, there's a couple other teams in that division that have been here before, so I'm going to trust them a little more. And then Boston and the Mets are going to finish out this tier. Again, two teams that seem pretty similar. It seems like this is not the finished product at all, and they may be a little ahead of schedule. But of course, they're right there for playoff spots. It's just going to be a pretty tough matchup if you have to go into Baltimore or if you're a National League team into, say, Philly.
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on to the B tier for me, I titled this tier the missing something tier. If they had this one thing, they would be a legitimate contender. So I'll start off with Seattle. The missing something here is obviously the offense. They have the starting rotation 1 through 5. They have the bullpen 1 through 8 or 7, however many guys they have in the back end there. But the offense is just not there. Even with the acquisitions of Randy Arozarena, Justin Turner, I just don't feel it with it. And, you know, maybe if their offense, you know, kicks it into gear later half of this, or, you know, last month of the season, and they go on to win the division, or they're going to have to win the division to get in considering the spots that they're at right now. But with Seattle, I just, without their offense, I don't see them going far in October. If they do get there, the next team I have is Boston. They're currently 2 out of a wild card spot. Obviously not going to win the division. But the biggest thing I have missing for them is a reliable playoff starting pitching. And I know they've gotten, you know, a great season from Tanner Houck and some good spurts from the guys like Cutter Crawford and James Paxton, who's now hurt actually too. But I just don't trust anyone really outside of Houck to get me good 5-6 innings in a playoff start, because that's what you need in order to win games, especially with the bullpen that's somewhat mediocre. With that being said, though, their offense has been the best in baseball pretty much in the second half, except for the Diamondbacks. So they've been good there. Just not enough pitching for me. Next team is the Giants. The thing that they're missing for me was a decent first half. They're in a backwards battle the whole, you know, month and a half rest of the season. They're trying to compete for a wild card spot with the Braves, Padres, and Diamondbacks. And those are three teams that have been either really good recently or have a track record of getting into the playoffs. And this Giants team, while they have the roster to do it, I just think they started off too slow and they're going to have to play too good a ball in the last month and a half to get in. And so I have them off of here. But if they had, you know, 20-10 April, I think they'd be right in the mix of a good contender.
Probably right next, San Diego.
Exactly. Next team is the Mets. And I have, again, same as Boston, reliable playoff starting pitching. I like their 1 through 5 of regular season starters, where it's a Manaea and it's a, you know, Severino, Paul Blackburn, who's been really bad today. But regardless, they don't have Kodai Senga anymore. And that was really the only guy in that rotation that I would really trust to take the ball for me in a playoff game. I know Sevy's been good. I know Manaea's been good. But I'm not betting on a bounce back season to go take the ball for me in game 1 or game 2 of the playoff series. So that's the thing that they're missing from being a, you know, legitimate starter. Maybe have Scherzer and DeGrom, they would be in there. But regardless, we're not onto that right now. And then the last team I have in here is Kansas City. And it ached me to put Kansas City in here because I love this team. I think they have good starting pitching. I think they have, you know, obviously an MVP caliber player, which usually helps. And they have some decent depth in their lineup, considering some of the things they did in trade deadline and how people played since the beginning of August. But the biggest missing factor for me is in the playoffs, the use of a home field advantage, because they're the 6th seed right now. And you're not going to be playing at home in that first series. And that's going to screw you when you're under 500 on the road, but 38-25 at home. They were to get a 4 seed, which I don't think they'd do. That would kind of flip the script. I think they'd be a good contender. But if they're playing on the road throughout the playoffs, I don't see it happening. So Kansas City, you are my last team in the missing something tier. Next up, two tiers to go for mine. Is that exactly where you're at too?
Yeah.
Perfect. So who is in your A tier, Skyler?
Yeah, this tier is going to be the teams that are all in, but we might be better next year. So it's not the end of the world. I think Baltimore perfectly headlines this tier here because they're another team that seems like they're just missing one thing, but they're a tier above that, obviously, at 70 wins. So they're going to lead this off because I don't think it's a failure of a season if they don't make the World Series like some other teams. Next up would be Cleveland. Again, they're in the right spot at the right time. Perfect timing for them. I just don't think they have enough firepower. Minnesota, can they stay healthy? Question mark. A couple NL West teams, Arizona and San Diego. I didn't think they'd be here. Really slow starts, other than the, you know, San Diego after a couple trades. They started to heat up a little bit, but I don't know if those guys can win on the road either. And then, of course, the Atlanta Braves. I think they deserve to be in this tier. They're just obviously missing their best player they've had in a very long time again. But, hey, the last time this happened, they won it all. They're up here in the I'm all in, but we're going to be back next year tier.
Yeah, I have I didn't have a good name for this. I just have second tier World Series contender because I didn't know exactly what to title it. But looking through this list, I have kind of teams that, like, there isn't a, you know, quantifiable reason on why I can say this team isn't going to do it. It just feels like maybe something is lacking a little bit to the point where they won't be able to make a run in October. And shockingly, the first team I have on here is Houston Astros. The pitching staff just doesn't feel as dominant and as Houston Astro-y as it's felt for me in the last 6 or 7 years. Will they probably end up in the ALCS? Probably, because of the Houston Astros. I just don't think they can win the World Series this year with how their pitching is. But then again, I know my words are going to bite me, dude. Like, it's just how it happens with this team. They'll be there in October. But as of right now, I just don't feel that much confidence in this team winning the World Series. The next team, the Atlanta Braves, it's really tough to win the World Series when you don't have the best player. You did that already. But it's even tougher when you don't have your second best player in Spencer Strider, who's also not there this year. And I think just the culmination of those factors, as well as Matt Olson, Sean Murphy, Austin Riley, Ozzie Albies, not having good seasons. Albies also hurt now too, but they just have too many things going wrong for them for me to really be like, yeah, this team's going to win it in October. Then again, everything's just got to click for 2 weeks and you're good. But regardless, as of right now, I don't think they're in that upper echelon of a contender tier, especially if they're going to be a 6 seed going into the playoffs or battling for a wild card spot like they are right now. Next team I have in here, also pretty shockingly, because I really love watching this team play baseball, and that's the Cleveland Guardians. I just think the starting pitching is a slightly too lacking of depth to be in that upper echelon tier, because if you're playing, you know, a 3-game series, I think it's fine. If you're playing a 5-game series, I think you can maybe get away with it. But if you're playing a 7-game series and you can't get a solid 5 innings out of any of the 4 or 5 guys that you're sending out there to start the game, by game 6 or 7, you're just toast, dude. Like, Emmanuel Clase is going to have to pitch 14 innings in the series. And while he might be able to do that, to be honest with you, he's been so damn good this year. You're putting so much pressure on those guys, and one of them is bound to mess up. So as much as I would love to put Cleveland as, you know, the S-tier number one team, because I love watching them play regular season baseball, they kind of feel like a Utah Jazz team here, where they, you know, got the 1 seed. They were really good in the in the regular season, but once it got to the playoffs, you could just see they just didn't have that thing that makes a playoff team a championship contender. Last team in here, and I also wanted to put this team in the S tier because they've been so damn good over the last month and a half. It's the San Diego Padres. And the thing that I think is lacking here is also a bit of starting pitching. I really like Dylan Cease, but besides that, I don't see enough guys that I can really trust with the ball for me. I know Musgrove's coming back, or last night he came back to make his first start in a couple of months. But is he going to be ready to go in a month and a half to really take those high, you know, value innings? Is Yu Darvish going to play this season? Like, his whole issue, or I don't know exactly what it is. I don't want to, you know, misstep or whatever, but he's got some confusing stuff going on. He might not pitch for the Padres the rest of the season. Matt Waldron, like, is he the guy? You know, Michael King's good, but is he the guy? I don't know. It's tough to stay with the Padres. I think they got the mojo for it right now, but I just think they're a step short of these other six teams that I have in the S tier. So with that being said, we're going to the S tier.
So my S tier is going to be a little smaller than yours. I only got three teams at the top. This tier is called I'm Disappointed If They're Not Playing in the World Series. I wanted to keep it short and sweet here. I got the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Phils. These have been the three best teams that I've seen with my own eyes this season. I know the numbers like Baltimore and Cleveland, but we've talked about their mistakes they've made or the shortcomings they have. The Dodgers have all their guys coming back right before it's time to kick into gear for the playoffs. The Yankees, kind of on the other end of the spectrum here, they're starting to lose guys. Will they be able to stay on track or will they fall apart? They're clearly the deepest team in the American League right now, lineup-wise, if you're not counting Baltimore. And then Philadelphia, it feels like they've owed us one, right? If they can beat the Dodgers, they should be in the World Series.
Yeah. So I'll start with the – I have six teams in this list. I just called it legit. I think that's a good, sweet, short name for this S tier. And I have the four teams that you'd expect to be in here. I have Yankees, who have the starting pitching. They have the bullpen. They have the lineup. They have the star power. Everything that you need of the contender. I have Baltimore in here. Only wavering thing is maybe the starting pitching, but they have the ace in Corbin Burns. They have a good two in Grayson Rodriguez. It's who's going to be that third and fourth guy to step up for you and get a starting spot there. But the lineup is also so good that I think it's, you know, reasonable to say that they'll be fine with maybe a bad three or four starter. I have Philly, who's had a rough second half, but when you compare them to the other teams in the NL, they're still up near the top because there's been so many teams that having a rough year or a rough second half specifically in the NL. They have the starters 1 through 4 that I think can get it done, especially at the top two with Wheeler and Nola. They've been there before. Ranger Suarez is a guy I like as well, too. Lineup experience, been there before, is capable of having big postseason at-bats, and so I like the Philly pick there. And then I also have the Dodgers because, I mean, I don't really need to get into reasoning for why I have the Dodgers. So the Dodgers, the last two teams, though, who I think are kind of shocker, really legit contenders for me, the first of which is the Arizona Diamondbacks. I've been on this for a while. If this team's healthy, this team is really, really, really scary because they have the starting pitching. They have Gallen, Kelly, Fott, Montgomery, who's been somewhat better as of late. But if you don't want to give him, start E-Rod. Like, you have four or five stars that you are comfortable to give the ball to in the playoffs. The bullpen's maybe the shaky part, but the lineup is the best lineup in baseball this year. They've scored the most runs in baseball, kind of shockingly, because the best player from last year, Corbin Carroll's been mid the entire season, but they've got so many bats 1 through 9 that you can trust. And the Diamondbacks are just going to be not an easy out for any team that's facing them come October. And the last team that I have is the Minnesota Twins. I talked about this again the entire season. You know, when healthy is the biggest thing for this Minnesota team. It's crazy how it seems like every single injury-prone guy in the league is on the Twins, whether that's Buxton, whether that's Royce Lewis, whether it's one of the pitchers, whether that's Matt Wallner. Whoever it is, if they're healthy, they are so damn scary because it's Wallner who's one dot and Royce Lewis who's one dot and Buxton who's got an OPS in the 800s. Correa's got an OPS in the 800s. Jose Miranda's got an OPS in the 800s. They have a lineup 1 through 9 that you can go to. They have a back on the bullpen that's tougher than anyone in the league, especially with Johan Duran and Griffin Jacks. And then they have a start of the rotation, Pablo Lopez, who maybe hasn't had it this year. But within the last 6 or 7 starts, he's been really good. Bailey Ober, same thing. And then if you get you know, with Joe Ryan hurt, maybe, you know, David Festa or Zevi Matthews, who they just called up today to be that guy, they've got it. So I have Minnesota as a legit contender.
All right.
It sounds kind of crazy, but
I definitely think they're closer to Baltimore than people think. I obviously have those two in their own tier. So interesting project we have here.
Yeah. But we still got a month and a half to go in the season. Obviously, a ton of storylines to figure out then. And once we even get into October, as you saw last year, crazy shit can happen.
Yes.
So we'll check back with this stuff as we go throughout the season, the last 60 games or 40 games, whatever it is. But we're moving on to our wide receiver tight end draft, which we'll keep track of throughout the NFL season, which will be pretty fun. We'll be going off of season stats, and this is how it will go.
Like a best ball this. Draft.
Exactly. So we'll have 10 rounds in this draft, so it'll be a total of 20 wide receivers / tight ends picked, and that's just a pool of players there. We're not like dedicating rounds of tight ends, dedicating rounds of wide receivers. Pick whoever, whenever you want. The scoring goes as follows. You get 10 points per every 100 yards, or, you know, I guess that could also be like, actually, no, we'll just keep it as 100. And then that way the thresholds are big. Because then, like, 1 point for every 10 yards would be a bit different. So 10 points for every 100 yards, 15 points per every touchdown, and 1 point per reception. So I guess a PPR format here. And I guess we can go ahead and flip a coin for the first pick of the drafts. Let me just pull up heads or tails. Skyler, what is your choice?
I'm going to go with heads. Ernie Adams, the official assistant of Bill Belichick for all their championships, said always pick heads. So that's what I'm going with.
And it is heads. I don't know if you can't see it too well, but it says heads.
Awesome.
So, do you want the first pick? Or are you going to defer the first pick?
I'm
going to
take the number one pick because there's so many issues with contracts right now. I'm going to take a guy who has his contract. We'll start off with Tyreek Hill. He won me a fantasy championship and surprisingly has the least amount of controversy out of all these guys so far.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a ton of different wide receivers that make it really tough. Is there, you know, Ayuk? Is it CeeDee Lamb? We don't know exactly. So I wanted to take two guys that I'm sure of with my first two picks. And the first guy that I'm going to look at is Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's going to be a guy who's getting the ball a lot. One of the most prolific offenses in the NFL, and it has a lot of different points to it that makes it to be, you know, kind of something that feels kind of fail-proof there. And then the next guy, a few people that I debated here, but I cannot deny the talents of Justin Jefferson. So I'm going to go with him. I think he's just going to be force-fed the ball this year, whether that involves Sam Darnold throwing 40 picks or not. Not my problem. He's going to get at least 10 to 12 targets a game. So I have Justin Jefferson as my second pick there.
You leave me in a tough position here with the Jefferson pick.
Do it, Skyler. I know there's somebody you want to take.
Well, I'm 100% going to be taking CeeDee Lamb first. There's no way he sits out the entire season, whether it's with the Cowboys or not. He has way too much money on the line after this season. So I love that volume. Here is a tough choice because I have a guy from my land here. And then there's also a guy who scores a lot of touchdowns still here. You know, this isn't PPR, but I still have to take him. I'm going to take Garrett Wilson. He puts up unbelievable numbers with the 39th ranked quarterback last year. And now Aaron Rodgers is coming back. How could it be worse? Right?
Yeah. No, I was definitely thinking about Garrett Wilson when I was talking about that. The one guy that I have in my top five is still here. I'm going to have to take to start off with going Ja'Marr Chase in Cincinnati. It seems like a sure thing right now. He'll be there at the top if everything, you know, stays health wise, of course. Next up, this is where it kind of jumps off a little bit of a tier, and it's kind of starts to become a little bit of a personal choice. I will go with I'm gonna go with Puka.
Okay.
I think he's gonna get the ball a ton this year. and could be a good choice.
I do like Puka, but there is one guy I still have left in that upper tier. I think AJ Brown is going to have at least one more great season. I'm not scared by Saquon Barkley coming in. I still think the amount of touchdown opportunities he has is hard to deny. Next is where, my next guy is really a PPR guy. So I'm going to take the first tight end of the draft, Sam Laporta.
Whoa, that is a bit of a shocker. A
lot of red zone opportunity. Again, I love Kyle Pitts' fit, but he's at the bottom of my board because I can't trust it in a non-PPR situation.
That's true. Kyle Pitts has the opportunity to be, like, ridiculously crazy, but I think Arthur Smith, even though he's not there, has, like, scared everybody off of him. So we'll see how that goes for Kyle Pitts. I'm not going to take him in this draft, but definitely an eye to watch for fantasy purposes. That being said, my next two picks, I will keep us on the wide receiver train to start. And I'm going to take the guy I trust the absolute most. And it's going to be Davante Adams. How could I go this entire draft without taking my favorite wide receiver? And so I get him there. And then the next guy, I was kind of scared to take him because I think there's so many different pieces around him now that makes it a bit tougher for him to succeed. But this guy and his quarterback have a connection like none we've ever seen. I'm going to take Travis Kelce. The red zone opportunity is going to be off the charts this year. They're going to be ball like crazy. And I think all these other targets might also take some attention away from Travis Kelce. And Mahomes is going to go to the guy he trusts the most over everybody. And so I'm going to take my first tight end here in round six as we pair back to go to Skyler.
All right. Yeah, well, those were my next two guys. So I'm just going to stick with my board here and get – well, we'll start it off with Mike Evans. What an absolute monster. This man just got paid, and hopefully he seems like the kind of guy that will take that and turn that into motivation rather than kind of fade away like we've seen with some guys who got paid. And kind of for the opposite reason, I'm going to take Chris Olave. There's not a whole lot else going on in that New Orleans offense right now. I know Shaheed got extended, but really, who else is Derek Carr going to look to in these end game situations?
It's true. All right. The next pick for me, let's see, it'd be round seven, round eight. This is tough. I think there's a ton of volume within this guy. Do I want to go there though? Actually, I'm going to go for a guy who I think could have a crazy leap if everything goes correctly, especially now with the new quarterback that can throw the ball. I'm going to go ahead and take Drake London with my number seven overall pick. And then moving on to the eight slots. I think there's some interesting choices here. One of them I'm considering is going to be a guy that I'll do it. I think it's fun. I'll go with Marvin Harrison as my pick here. So I get two young guys, or Marvin Harrison Jr., not senior, by the way, as my pick here. So you get – yeah, we're still on the two-pick side, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this is your eighth and ninth pick.
Yeah, I love the Marvin pick because I was going to take Malik Nabers with my next pick. The reason I have him over Marvin, just one, I mean, they could be technically tied, right? I have them right next to each other on the board, but Malik Nabers is much better than Jalin Hyatt was coming in his first season. I think he's going to have so many targets that they're eventually going to figure out some kind of connection with Daniel Jones. After that, kind of into the third tier here, I'm going to grab DK Metcalf. It's still a guy I know can be a number one and can be a top 10 scorer because he's an athletic freak, man.
No, I like that. So I have these my last two picks right here. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, my last two picks here. There's a name that I think is up near the top that should go. And I'm kind of surprised you haven't taken him yet. I'm going to go with Michael Pittman. He was really good last year. The only thing is How does Anthony Richardson do this stuff with an offense? And we're not really too sure yet, but I think having a guy like him should be pretty sure on his production. And the last one, I guess I can say who I'm considering here. Yeah. I'm considering picking one of the Texans because they're going to have a good offense. But I think with, you know, Malik, Stephon Diggs, and Tank Dell all being such viable options, it kind of makes all of them worse in a way, except for maybe Tank Dell because he was not as good as some of these other guys in the past, even though he was productive when he was healthy last year. But we're also looking at a lot of secondary receivers. I'm going to go ahead and take a complete shocker here, but I think he's going to be really good in the red zone and really good for his rookie quarterback reception-wise. And I'm going to take Keenan Allen as my last pick.
Okay. I like that. I have DJ Moore on the board, but I'm not going to go with him. I'm down to two. I'm thinking either go with the handcuff, Jalen Waddle, just in case anything happens to my number one pick. And then, of course, there's Brandon Ayuk still available. That could be great value.
Not if he's a Steeler.
That's true. Let's go with Jalen Waddle. Let's get both the Dolphins. They're going to be throwing the ball so much this season. Well, at least when it's warm.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. Only two tight ends go off the board, but that's our draft there. So going through Skyler's team first, we got Tyreek, CeeDee Lamb, Garrett Wilson, A.J. Brown, Sam Laporta, Mike Evans, Chris Olave, Malik Neighbors, DK Metcalf, and Jalen Waddle. And then moving to my team, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Puka Nacua, Davante Adams, Travis Kelce, Drake London, Marvin Harrison Jr., Michael Pittman Jr., and Keenan Allen. So
win off touchdowns.
That's the hope. There's no Mark Andrews, no Trey McBride, no Dalton. Wow. I'm looking at ESPN's rankings for tight ends right now. Have you seen these before?
No.
They have Andrew. Okay, so Kittle, Kelce, Laporta, 1 and 2. And then Andrews, 3. McBride, 4. Kincaid, 5. Evan Engram, 6. Pitts, 7. Kittle, 8. Pretty interesting to me. They have Hawkinson at 12 because of injury, but will be drafted. You know, should be good later in the season. I don't know, kind of interesting stuff there. Ben Sinat? Who's Ben Sinat?
He's a rookie from Kansas State. He'll probably be the number one immediately for Jane Daniels.
Number 18 on there. But regardless, okay, that does it for our draft there. We'll go ahead and move into the second half with some preseason notable injuries from Skyler.
Yeah, it's always the worst time of the year, right? Preseason injuries when it doesn't really matter and we miss out on watching guys play. So let's just get right into it. We'll start off with a guy I actually drafted, Malik Neighbors. Turns out he says he's okay, though, even though there was a rumor out there from one of the rumor Twitter accounts that no one really knows if you can trust him, that he had a high ankle sprain. He got interviewed on NFL Network about 20 minutes later and said he's completely fine. So someone said, not a fracture, maybe something to look out for, though, if he's lying. A major injury here. Falcons' third-round pick, edge rusher Braylon Trice from Washington, a guy I loved, tore his ACL in the first preseason game. Just absolutely brutal. Hopefully he can come back after the redshirt season because this is a guy I had ranked in the 30s and he went in the 60s in the draft. So definitely could be a steal here if he can get healthy. Hollywood Brown, another big one, the Kansas City receiver. They're calling it a sternoclavicular joint dislocation, very similar to the AC joint that we saw from, shit, who was it on Kansas City?
Oh, someone, man,
had the same exact injury last year.
I know Keenan Allen's had stuff like that in the past, but I'm not. Was it MBS that had something like that last year? I don't know.
It could have been. But yeah, that's a good comparison for sure with Keenan Allen. Will it be a 3-game thing or a 12-game thing? Drew Locke of the Giants, he's expected to miss the rest of the preseason with a hip pointer. Really weird there because a lot of people thought he could possibly push Daniel Jones for that starting job. Another brutal one, the rookie corner for Baltimore, Nate Wiggins, who ran the fastest 40 for all DBs.
He has a shoulder sprain too after having three pass breakups in the preseason game. He's questionable for week one. Another draft pick, Troy Fontenot from the Steelers. He is going to deal with an MCL sprain in the knee. Again, he came in, started the preseason game, did not finish it. Really rough there. And maybe the biggest one in our group of friends here that I was texting about was the Ambry Thomas injury. He got carted off in the first half against the Titans. Turns out he fractured his arm. He's probably going to be out for the entire season, you would imagine, unless like they go on a deep playoff run again. So rough. We hate to talk about it, but it's part of the game, especially fantasy football. You're going to want to know these things. Who is going to be able to go in your week one lineup? Probably not those guys we mentioned.
Yeah. Moving on to our Labs Bowl predictions as we kind of move quicker pace to episode here in episode 205. Our layups and bowl predictions last week were not that good. We went 1-for-4. The only one that we got right was in Arizona first five on against Cleveland on Wednesday. They played two against Cleveland on Wednesday. Regardless, they did them both. So it obviously went green there. Skyler had Kansas City over St. Louis on Friday. Unfortunately, that did not happen. This week, I have Arizona getting a W on Wednesday. They should be heavy favorites. They're facing a Colorado Rockies team, but maybe the inflated ERA from Jordan Montgomery might move it down a little bit. So I say take Arizona on Wednesday.
All right. I'm going to go with baseball again for both of mine. Layup-wise, Friday night, Mets over the Marlins, another heavy favorite here. I heard Manaea versus Edward Cabrera at one point. Now it's looking like Miami's more undecided about it. But either way, Manaea at home has been great this season. I got the Mets.
Yeah. Moving on to the bold prediction side of it. I had Tampa Bay winning a series in St. Louis last week. Unfortunately, that did not happen. Some bad luck there. Skyler had Pittsburgh over the Dodgers on Saturday. That was a skiing start, I want to say, right?
Yeah.
He was okay, but still got beat by the Dodgers because that Pittsburgh offense is so terrible. This week, I have Minnesota winning at least 3 out of 4 in the reigning champs, not the Houston Texans. The Texas Rangers over the weekend, still a little bit away from football, but I said Minnesota wins at least 3 out of 4 in that 4-game series down in the Lone Star State this weekend.
All right. My pick is going to be the LA Angels of Anaheim winning one at home Friday night against the Atlanta Braves. It's a great matchup of young pitchers. Soriano has been excellent, one of the most consistent starters in the American League. I have him taking down Schwellenbach, who's also been pretty good for Atlanta down the stretch, but hoping we can steal one here with pretty rough odds for the Angels the end of this season.
Yeah. That's going to go ahead and do it, though, for episode 205, the wide receiver draft, some contender tier lists, player of the week, all that stuff that we did. I don't have any parting notes. Skyler, you got anything?
We didn't talk about the Hassan Reddick holdout. I just want to say that's fucking ridiculous, man. I mean, there's video of him saying how excited he is to come, and he doesn't care about the money. And then all of a sudden we trade John Franklin Myers, and he's holding out again. So hopefully we can get this guy in the building, because here's the thing about him. The defense is going to be okay, but you can't legitimately say after losing Bryce Huff, this team should go out and win the Super Bowl if you haven't really replaced him yet. Hassan Reddick's not there. And that's still bugging me. But yeah, that's all.
Yeah. We'll see you guys next week for episode 206. Probably be talking running backs.
Okay.
If the order goes in the way that I expect it.
You saw number one.
Maybe power rankings. I don't know. We'll see. But that'll do it. We will see you guys next week. Episode 206.
Let's go, Jets.